We've got three things to discuss this week. The release of the iPhone XS and iPhone XS Max, the release of the Apple Watch Series 4, and a little bit later, the release of macOS Mojave, which the fun thing there is, you know, I've been running it since day one in the beta process, and that was the one beta version that Mayo, you didn't install until it was actually out, right? Like, not
yeah, I generally always just leave my Mac because I only have one computer, so I don't like, and I actually have like proper work to do. So, and the way Xcode works on betas is all very annoying and weird. So I keep my laptop on public releases, and then let my phone and my watch and everything else be on the beta train. Yeah. But yeah, so it's been a new experience for me from Monday.
Yeah. Let's start out with the iPhone XS and iPhone XS Max. We talked about the announcement. We talked about the reviews in the last couple of weeks, and then I took pre-order. I took ownership of one on the release day, thanks to a very late order from my carrier AT&T on pre-order day. Like, it was last minute, but it actually came, and I was really surprised by that. Just a few things to share here. I got the XS Max. It is bigger, but I don't know what it is, but it doesn't seem like massive in comparison. It does make the 10 feel small now, but it doesn't feel massive. And I remember the first time I had the 6 Plus phone. I was in the grocery store buying groceries, and I couldn't one-hand text change the keyboard. And holding it in my right hand, I couldn't reach the punctuation, the change to punctuation marks and stuff. And I couldn't reach emoji. And I was like, this isn't going to work for me. I can't one-hand this phone. And I ended up returning it. And then I went to the Plus phone the following year with the 6S. And it's like, your hand, you just get used to stretching, I guess, or shuffling it in your hand in a way that's necessary. I mean, we all used to be used to 3.5-inch and 4-inch phones, and now 4.7 and 5.8-inch screens are the acceptable smallest number.
Yeah, they're the norm.
Before
these announcements, I just did, because everyone's talking about the rumors of the 6.1-inch phone and the 6.5-inch phone and how Apple's competing with everybody else, and I just went on a carrier website and averaged the diagonal screen resolution of every single phone they had featured there. And the average was 5.5. And that includes the 5 iPhones that at the time are all smaller, right? So that they were pulling down the numbers. So definitely the wider market is in that, 5 to 6-inch range. Mm-hmm. I think there's a few... And I haven't bought a XS, and I haven't even seen a XS or a Max. So take this extreme face value. But I think there's a few factors where it makes it doesn't feel as big as a Plus phone for a start. The 10 is bigger than the 8 series, right? It is bigger. So your fingers had already adjusted to getting slightly bigger up the spectrum, just on, it was a few centimeters wider. And then I think there's a big value in that a lot of the chassis is actually the screen. Whereas the Pluses, not only were they big, they were big and wasteful. So much of the screen was so much of the body was just the plastic bezels on both sides.
Yeah, that definitely works in your favor when the elements are on the bottom of the screen. But if it's control center, then you're doing no good. I've not compared the width on the Max phone to the Plus phones, but is it narrower still because of the kind of 2-to-1 ratio?
It's hairs smaller. They call it smaller than the eight Plus, but it is a millimeter smaller. It's basically identical.
Yeah. One thing about the big having a bigger phone this time around is, reachability is on the 10, 10S and 10S Max, but it's not nearly as easy to use. Reachability, to lower the display, the content under the display down toward the bottom of the phone so you can reach it better, was a double tap, not a click, but a double tap of the Touch ID sensor, or home button, I guess, on the older phones. And on the 10 and later, it's a swipe down from the bottom, which is really easy to either not do if you have a case on your phone without an open bottom like Apple's cases have, or like touching an app. It's hard to do that because
because you can't get like a grip on the bottom because your thumb, the gesture basically means your thumb's going off the end. Like it's like going off the end of the diving board. It kind of loses its footing.
If you go too far above the dock, you go into spotlight search like as intended. And so it needs to be somewhere on the dock, but not too far up and not too far down in that you just like tap an icon and open up one of your icons in the dock. So it's tricky to do, but I have done it, you know, as needed.
Do you know if that's on by default?
I don't know. I did a restore and I've had it on out of necessity. Another thing I found about the size is that I think I figured out why, but I was always okay with using my 10 without a case. I had a case for like occasions that I thought, you know, this is going to slip out of my pocket or something. But like if I wore jeans, I was no case. It just fit better in my pocket that way. With the 10S Max, because of the bigger size, I've had a case on it since the moment I got it. I got the case first. And I've determined that what I think it is when you hold it in your hand, like bottom up, my hand hits about the center of the back of it, the top of my hand does. And it's just top heavy. Like there's just more weight concentrated at the top than what's in the palm of my hand. And so it just feels like it's on the verge of like diving forward. And I think it's just the difference in the weight and like how much screen is not on my hand, you know, versus being mostly in the palm of my hand. And so I'm much more comfortable with the case now, like out of necessity. And the fact is like I used the 10 for a long time and like I'm used to that design now. There's not much to look at. Like it's just a bigger version of what there already was. And if you've got a space gray model, it's just kind of bland. I get if you have a gold one, you kind of want to show it off. But having seen the gold in person, my wife got one of the gold Maxes on launch day without pre-ordering. I like the metal part of it, but not the glass. The glass back is not like the color I prefer. I'd prefer if that were like black or maybe I think I'd like it to be black and gold. But
Does the bottom of the phone annoy you now that it's asymmetric holes?
I see it. The holes, I guess, less so because it wasn't like it was two speakers there. It was like, you know, a speaker and like holes, maybe a mic.
I mean, they made them look like two speakers, right? Even though they weren't. Like, yeah. They drew the holes to fake it.
Yeah, even if it was just like the four holes there on one side and then the, you know, the holes on the speaker side, it wouldn't catch my attention as much. Or I guess I would just know it, like one of those is speaker and one's not. But the band catches my attention a lot because even though I'm using the Apple leather case, you still see that band. You don't see any of the other bands around because they're covered. But it catches my eye a lot, even with the space gray model, because it's like shiny steel, and then that plasticky bit that's not shiny, like it sticks out.
Yeah. I wonder if, like on the 10, they faked the left-hand side to make it symmetric with the right-hand speaker. I wonder for the 10S if they considered putting a band on the right-hand side to make it match the required band on the left.
Yeah.
And they might have done that, but I bet it impacted the loudness of the speaker, which is one of the flagship features of the phone is the, mm-hmm, you know, 50% louder sound, wider stereo stuff. So they probably couldn't do it.
Yeah. The only other thing, well, I'll say this was true of the 10 too, is the using it without a case is really nice in the hand, but I just my finger, my thumb usually hits the send trail a lot. Like I can feel it. And if I use a case, it's covered up and I don't feel that it's like smooth all the way around. So when I've tried using the 10S Max with no case, like I find myself like rubbing the SIM tray and like feeling the sharp edges of it. And it's like, okay, now you do eSIM and you do SIM. I wouldn't mind having no SIM tray at all. Like if that were, I guess, more widely supported or something, I don't know, but
I mean, they'll get there eventually, no doubt, but you can just see from their like list of partners for the eSIM stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough for them to be able to drop the SIMs entirely at this stage. It's just impossible.
I think even in the US, it's like three out of the four major carriers. And like, I think Sprint's excluded and Sprint, you know, could become T-Mobile. So then that won't matter, I guess. Or maybe it will. Maybe T-Mobile will have like splintered eSIM support for a bit. But
and even Apple keeps marketing as you have your physical SIM and then you add an eSIM for your second line. Like,
right.
It's not definitely eSIM. A gateway drug this year to start to, because they face so much pressure to add eSIMs to the iPhone. in the last few years, they even have that court case going on at the moment where the US carriers were blocking eSIM adoption. That's ongoing, a big like federal case.
Yeah.
And obviously they did it on the watch because, you know, there's physically no room for an actual SIM tray there. And then they started to do it on the iPads, and the iPads have had Apple CME SIM for a while, but they never dropped the SIM tray either. They're definitely going in the direction. They just don't have the they don't have the enough people on board yet to be able to actually drop the SIMs on their, you know, on their tablets and their phones.
Yeah. The next thing about the XS Max is, like, honestly, I think it could be a little bit bigger. Like, I think it could go.
You want to be bigger?
I'm serious. Like, because I can handle it so well. I feel like there could be a little bit more room for this to be like, so my wife has a XS Max now, and she's got an iPad mini, the, you know, 9.7 iPad, and they're so different, like aspect ratio, bezel, but also just like the raw screen size itself is like, it's a vast difference between, you know, 6.5 and 7.9. Like it's almost, it's nearly an inch and a half. And it's like, it's just totally different. It's like, and I could see this being like, it's 6.5, and I think it's really like 6.4 plus this curve involved. They could do like a full inch over the 5.8-inch iPhone X, like 5.8 and 6.8. Like, I'm curious what that would look like, or something with the resolution, because it feels like it's definitely physically bigger. You know, it mammoths the iPhone X, and it can show more content. It's just that like the home screen is like a mix of like larger elements, you know, larger dock and larger icons, but the and you know, some more spacing, but you don't get like another row of icons, for example. And it just feels like that, you know, they could show more. And part of this may be that a lot of the apps are not updated yet for the Mac size or for the XR size. And Things is one that I use often that is, and so I was able to compare side by side and appreciate that that's bigger. But like Instagram, who knows when they will update. Tweetbot has an update in test flight, but like not on the App Store yet. So it's like, oh, I'm glad I'm in the test flight. Just so many third-party apps haven't yet. And the thing about it is the apps on their own look okay. Like they're not letterboxed. They're not really blurry. They've got the normal keyboard. They just don't show as much content as they could. You know, once the elements shrink down, like to the resolution it's supposed to be.
Yeah. So when they're not updated, they are zoomed up 5.8-inch resolution screens, you know, viewports essentially, which does mean the keyboard is actually slightly different too, because it's just like, it's just not as noticeable because, you know, if you look on an iPad, on a 12.9-inch iPad, and you open a 9.7-inch app, the keyboard is gigantic and it looks like Lego. It's like a child's thing, whereas on this the difference in the actual screen size is small enough that it's a lot harder to spot. But
and I guess it's that if you ran an iPhone, if you, iPhone 6 Plus, and you had a non-updated app, it was probably made for the iPhone 5 with a 4-inch screen size, right? So like it looked bad on the 6, but like worse on the 6 Plus.
Yeah,
it was just such a big jump from 4 inches to 5.5 inches. But in this case, it's 5.8 to 6.5, and so it's not that big of a difference.
And the PPI of the iPhone X is quite high already, so the fact they spread it out and it kind of just fills in, you don't notice is like the blurriness on the edges. It reminds me a lot of the tricks they do on like the laptops, where you can have the scaled resolutions.
Yeah,
and they're technically wrong, right? And if you look really close, you can spot it, but it's nowhere near as offensive as, you know, letterboxing or the iPad situations where you have 2x apps or anything like that. It's nowhere close to that.
Yeah, and you can find letterboxed apps, but they'd be letterboxed on iPhone X and I think iPhone, maybe even the bezel phones. So, like, I found one game. I guess maybe they're not updated for iPhone X yet, but I found, like, one game that wasn't yet, and someone had mentioned that I think the WWE app hasn't been updated in, like, years, and so it's in a bad place.
Yeah, games are actually in an interesting situation. Because for a start, for games, the actual raw resolution is more important in performance characteristics, just because it literally does change how much the phone needs to render. So it's a lot harder for, like with an app, like let's say an email app, right? Whether the phone's displaying 4 emails at once or 5 emails at once, like the CPU difference there is pretty minimal.
Yeah.
Whereas if you actually consider the possible extra things a game could show with the extra space, like a proper 3D game, it's not as easy for like the developers to like flick a switch. They, you know, if they're being responsible, they want to check like the frame rate hasn't been affected in all of these different cases and all these different scenes by actually showing slightly more every opportunity. And then on top of that, the notch problem is particularly more of an issue when you're doing like game development, because when you're doing like an app, you have like UI kit to help with you. You have all the standard controls that O'Malley like make big title bars and they push stuff out of the way. Whereas when you're doing a game, that's a lot more in your court. And even I remember when the iPhone X was introduced, they showed a game and like the notch cut off some of the buttons of the game on like the Apple demo. And it's just a lot harder for them to sort that out. So that's why so many games have just not bothered with adapting for iPhone X. They just letterbox up to where the notch is just to make it easier, just to have a plain rectangle. And obviously that then carries over to the Max as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that kind of concerns me here that I've been getting to is that the apps look okay. Like Instagram especially, like the picture is just bigger. You know, the it's kind of nice to have those larger pictures without it being the right resolution. But I'm a little bit concerned that it, because there's no pressure to make your app go from like hideous to acceptable, that maybe they won't be updated as quickly. Like who knows how long it will take for Facebook to update their app for the XR and XS Max. But yeah, I mean honestly, I mean that like I could probably have handled this phone being a little bit bigger, and the name Max suggests that like this is as far as they're going to go. Until Samsung, you know, releases their 7-inch version of the Note or something, like, you know, but it's all about the aspect ratio and the amount of bezel, that like you can approach tablet size on phones without it being like a literal tablet. You know, if 2:1 is different than, it's like 4:3,
which is what the iPads are.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing about the size of the Max is the status bar is exactly the same, or the notch is exactly the same size as the 10. It's unchanged. It's the same amount of sensors and everything. But the ears on either side of it is a larger space because you know the screen's bigger. And they've not done anything to like take advantage of that. Like my infamous AT&T WIF carrier name when I use Wi-Fi calling in AT&T. Remains, even though they could fit AT&T Wi-Fi on the lock screen in the status bar, it still scrolls because it's padded, and there's no option to like turn on the battery percentage if you wanted to. I mean, it's like partially a good thing that they're not like going back to the old way of like overloading the status bar with icons, but I think they could at least address the AT&T WIF issue.
Yeah, I think showing a few more characters for your carrier name is perfectly legitimate use, because you're showing the carrier name in the first place, right? It's not like you're adding another indicator on the top. You're just trying to actually see the indicator that's there. And for whatever reason, what they've done on the Max is just insert the content in the ears to make them the same width as what they are on the smaller phone. Like, yeah. I don't know why they chose to do that. It would almost be, it seems like for me, it'd be easier for them not to add these custom insets in for the bigger one and just let the carrier name fill the extra space, because it's designed to scroll because it scrolls on your phone, right? So it would just scroll but with slightly less scrolling. So I don't really understand why they've done that. And there are definitely, I'm not in the battery percentage camp, but there are a lot of people who really want to see their battery percentage. Like that's like a Reddit complaint 101. That's up there with the modal volume HUD thing. Like people just love the battery percentage for some reason. And on the right-hand side, if they actually filled the space, they probably could fit the two numbers in there to actually show the battery percentage optionally. Yeah. I don't really know where they've done that. And yeah, it's kind of, especially the AT&T and like Wi-Fi stuff, like it just, you know, there's just a little bit of extra space there that you could just fill with a couple of extra letters. It's not rocket science.
You could probably make it work on the 10, so like definitely do it on the Max. Other thing is I opted for the 512 gigabytes of storage model because I do pay through AT&T Next 12 where you upgrade every year by turning in your old phone. I think the payment is like it's under $50, and the difference is like less than $10 a month to be between 256 and 512 gigabytes. And so I had a lot of free space on 256, but the thing is I couldn't have as much local music in all of my photos and videos in my iCloud photo library local. I had to use optimized storage. And so it just would optimize storage and wouldn't use as much as it probably could have. On 512, I'm able to have my library local, which just means like anytime I take a photo, it's going to be there without having to like re-download it for some reason. And it's a little bit faster that way, especially like if I'm sharing the photo or if it's like an old photo, for example. And that's especially useful for video because offloading video means the video, like Apple doesn't stream it as fast as like YouTube might, you know, they download it and it takes a while. So that's neat to have. And they have that one weird option in music. Like you have no control over your photos downloading like in the back. You know, it's like yes, everything downloads, or no, optimized storage, and I just trust you to do the right thing, and it never does. With music, you have granular controls of like download at least this much music, and the option is always up to at least half of your storage. And so like on a 256 gigabyte phone, you can have at least 100, or, you know, you can say at least download 120 gigabytes of my library because it's half your storage. On the 512 version on the XS and XS Max, you can get at least half of that. So at least 256 gigabytes. That's cool. And I'm glad that there's the even higher option of 256 now, you know, half. But it seems like as you make those big leaps, like 32 to 64 to 128 to 256, like the difference in between the delta is like a lot bigger, and maybe they should just have like a click wheel, like some kind of granular control,
like a slider.
Right, yeah, because like maybe I want a little bit more than 256 because I'd still have 256 gigabytes free, you know, that I could say always use music for that, like just like you can partition your hard drive on your Mac and any amount that you want. A slider would be nice.
Yeah, and extrapolating out to the other end of the spectrum, if you've only got a 64 gigabyte model, you might want the opposite. Like you want only up to 16 gigabyte storage used, because the music screen's always phrasing minimums, right? It's like at least 8 gigabytes of music, at least 16. Like a lot of people want only store up to 8 gigabytes of music and intelligently delete the rest.
Yeah.
And that's the same. And photos is more on that, like phrasing that way, but you don't get to choose how aggressively it does it. It just kind of does its own thing and generally does okay, but then in the weird cases it messes up. So yeah, it's kind of a funny control. Like the whole of iOS like storage management is still very, very confusing and inconsistent. Like it's such a computery problem and they haven't really tackled it in a way. I kind of feel like Apple is just kind of waiting till like every phone gets so big nobody has to worry anymore. It's just like we got through the 16 gigabyte nonsense. Now we're at 64 gigabyte base, and soon enough it'll be 256 gigabyte baseline. Mm-hmm. You know, 1 terabyte maximums. And when you get to that point, you're probably the need for like fine grade control of how to manage the storage kind of goes away. But it's definitely a problem that, you know, persists around for sure.
Yeah. So I'm happy to have the larger storage option. If I was buying outright, I probably would avoid the larger storage option. It's expensive, especially with the Max. It's like,
well, and the tiers, like the difference between the 64 and the 256 is 150, but the difference between 256 and 512 is another 200. So it's not even like 100. It's not even just doubling the 150. They add on a little bit more just to be a little bit cheeky.
Right. Exactly. They scale it with the proportion of how much you're getting, I guess. But then they make a lot more money from it too. It's like donation profit. But
yeah, there was some report like based on component costs that if you buy the 512, you're giving like $200 more in just pure profit to Apple.
Yeah. So, but I'm happy to have 512. That's been on the iPad Pro for a while now. The craziest thing is like my iPhone is 512 gigabytes. My MacBook is 256 gigabytes because I cheaped out, and I wish I had more RAM too. And then my iPad is 32 gigabytes. My watch is 16, so I've got like the whole range. I don't have any of the 64 gigabyte devices. I've never bought a 64 gigabyte Apple TV or anything. But I got like the whole spectrum there. I mentioned gold. I like the gold finish on the new phones. It's just not for me. And as we'll get to in the watch section, the gold watch is for me. So I think like matching your phone with your watch. I was always a little bit sensitive to if they're both aluminum in the same color. It just feels a little bit cheap to me. But with the steel phones, it's less so. Like I can see having a silver steel watch and a silver white iPhone, or the same thing. Like if you've got a space black watch and a space gray iPhone, those are very similar. But like to go gold on both my phone and watch was like, it wasn't, that is not a move for me. It's like too much in the gold camp. But the gold itself is like, it looks really good. Like I said before, I'm not a big fan of like the color of the glass and the gold. I like the solid white or the space gray color. Like, you know, maybe they could even do solid black, but, I imagine we'll see a lot of those in the wild. Like it's the only version of the XS that looks a lot different, and it's a nice, you know, version on the XS Max.
And it's the one Apple keeps pushing in every single advert.
Yeah, yeah. And they've got like just one gold again like they had last year, where it's not gold and rose gold. It's like just gold, and it's a little bit of both. One of the unique features of the XS and XS Max is the depth control feature, where after you take a photo in the Photos app, you can edit it and then slide the like fake aperture to change the f-stop level, which changes the amount of blur in the background. That's in 12.0 and 12.1 beta, which is a developer and public beta version of iOS. You can do that before you take the photo, like see it in the preview. And what that looks like is you get an F button in the top right corner of the portrait mode viewfinder, and then it appears the same little slider, and you can see before you take the photo. So that's really neat. Michael Stieber did a really good post that had lots of examples of portrait mode photos taken on the XS Max. I did a story that had just comparisons of the iPhone X photos compared to the XS photos. And the difference is like, to me, it was not hard to find examples where it looked way different. You know, there's a smart HDR feature for one that applies to lots of different cameras. So like I could just take any panorama photo, especially with like the sky in it, and get a better version with the Max. And the same thing with like low light pictures. I can just get more detail, more color and vibrancy with the Max. So as like the difference, you know, of going from a 10 to a XS Max, like the size difference wears off, and like the speed difference, if they're, you know, if that can even be noticed anymore, like as that wears off, you know, I might have like buyer's remorse. But seeing like, you know, spending like 1 hour taking photos on both phones sold me. It's like, nope, don't want to go back to the other camera. Like there were literally pictures of my son that I captured in low light that were just kind of grungy on the 10 and like look pretty good on the XS Max.
Yeah, the camera is significantly better. And I this is going to sound really, I don't know if I should say this considering I own neither a XS nor a Pixel 2.
Yeah.
I do, from what people post, I do think there are a reasonably high number of cases where the Pixel 2 does, to my eyes, take better pictures still. Mm. And I think the only difference is that the Pixel 2 retains slightly more detail in like the textures of skin tones or anything really. Mm. Like, and I don't believe there's like a hardware reason. There may be that the argument that Apple is not as good at machine learning algorithms as Google is. I'm not sure I buy that either. I just think it's like a preference that they've made when they engineered it, and they're like, we like it to be slightly more smoothed out. And generally, if you're looking at it on like the phone screen, I think they'll look the same, or maybe the XS even looks better. If you zoom in slightly, and the iPhone X has this problem as well, but it's the kind of the same on the XS, is that if you actually zoom in, like a lot of the pixels on the, you can just see like they've just kind of been blended together more. Whereas if you zoom in like a Pixel 2 photo, you kind of see more defined lines and actual tones. And I believe, it's just instinct, that I think that they could offer an option for the iPhone camera to retain more of the detail and do less smoothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, makes sense.
In a software update. Now, whether they do that or not is a different matter, but I think they could do it, and if they did do it, I would turn it on. Just so you get that slight extra bit of definition retained.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't even have to be on by default, but I do think it'd be a nice option to offer. Because there are definitely cases where it's like, these pictures are really nice, but they are slightly more like mosaic-y than like what a Pixel 2 has been shown to take, you know, numerous times over.
An awful lot of people saying that the Pixel 2 camera bests the, you know, 10 for a while in the 10S in this example. And it's like to me, that's good because then the iPhone has competition that it hasn't had for a while, but it's nothing that's going to make me change to a Pixel 2 like at all. There's so many other differences that it's just like, you know, that's cool. My real camera takes better pictures too, but like, you know.
Yeah, and I hope Apple obviously improves it even more, right? Like, I think it's perfectly fair to compare them because it's like, you know, Apple's selling expensive phones, right? You want them to be the best in all categories pretty much. But at the same time, you know, a phone isn't just defined by one feature, right? Like, it's a package of different things. One of my favorite, like, Steve Jobs quotes is when he was at, like, the D conference and they were asking about Flash. This is back when Adobe Flash on the iPad was a massive controversy.
Uh-huh.
And
the lack of, yeah.
Yeah, the lack of, yeah. And it was like, well, if you don't have Flash, people aren't going to buy it. Like, are people not going to buy it? I think that was roughly the question.
Yeah, and he's like, the market will speak for itself. Like,
yeah, and it's like, these are packages of products. You have priorities and you have things that are good and things that are prioritized and things that are, you know, average and some things that aren't in the product. And customers speak for themselves. And if they really, really cared about this stuff, they wouldn't buy the iPad. And, you know, it's obviously not what happened. And, like, I think it's the same thing here. And you do have obviously some, like, extenuating factors like lock-in and everything, you know, contract renewals and stuff like that. But at the same time, like, the XS camera is more than good enough to be competitive. In certain situations, I'd say the Pixel 2 can edge it out, but that's not enough to, like, abandon the platform by any means. Like, there's plenty of other cases. I'd say in almost every other situation that the iPhone's a better choice. And then in these slight things where you're looking at, like, picture detail, the Pixel's winning out, I think, reasonably. A lot of people agree on that. And hopefully Apple can push up that even further in future. But as a whole product, it's hard to argue that, like, the iPhone's not a bad phone by any stretch. Like, it's incredible, right? Like, I think,
like, you're arguing great versus, like, better than great, you know, I guess.
Yeah, and it's like, the iPhone screen is fantastic. Like, that's the biggest problem with the Pixel 2, I think. It's just the displays are bad, and maybe that they're announcing Pixel 3 in about a month, so hopefully they'll be better there. But, like, you want Apple to be the best in everything, and I think on the camera, they're not quite there. But
for the still photos, like, for video, they are better.
Yeah, the video, they're actually better. The video on the XS is really clever. Like, if you do 4K 30 frames per second video, they take intermittent frames because obviously the camera can record 60 frames per second 4K video. But what they do is, if you record at 30 frames per second, they still take 60 frames, and then they just use the alternate frames as to give extra exposure and extra detail, and then they end up, the final video that's stitched together is 30 frames only. They do some incredibly clever stuff with video, whether it's like the image quality or stabilization, etc., etc.
Yeah, whereas the Pixel 2 can't do 4K 60 frames per second.
Like, yeah,
and can't do that in the 10 camera.
And the Note 9, just to bring it up, can do 4K at 60, but only for 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Which is like completely random, but you can only record for 5 minutes, then you have to stop and start again, and that's like a limitation of like the memory on the chip or something. It's very weird. But the iPhone, you can do 4K at 60 and just record for an hour, like just use your entire storage up.
Yeah, like my dedicated camera can do 4K 30, but even that, like, I've got a dedicated camcorder too that I don't use very much at all. But my dedicated camera, like, the problem with 4K video there, even at 30 frames per second, is it gets hot and it overheats, and then you have to let it cool down. Like, you don't have that with the iPhone. The thing about the XS video is that there are a lot of options that you can choose for your video format, and it's all in the settings app, like not in the camera app. So you got to like decide and commit to it. 720p HD at 30 frames per second, 1080p HD at 30 frames per second, 1080p HD at 60 frames per second, 4K at 24 frames per second, 4K at 30 frames per second, or 4K at 60 frames per second. And if you choose 4K at 30 frames per second, then you've got the option for that auto low light frames per second. It's like you get a lot of choices there. And you still get it. Like, I'm kind of surprised by this. You get a choice for the new Smart HDR feature. You can turn it off. Like, it's off or on. Just like you can choose.
And you can keep the normal photo still.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It's like, HDR, Smart HDR, keep normal photo. Both of those are on for me. Smart HDR intelligently blends the best parts of separate exposures into a single photo. Save the normally exposed photo in addition to the HDR version. It's like, I guess you turn it off if you didn't like the effect or something. I don't know why you would, but it's like the big thing.
Well, there are some cases where it will, like if you're like, say if you actually want to take a silhouette on a sunset, for instance.
Okay, sure.
You probably want to turn it off because then you'd actually get a silhouette. Whereas if you leave it on, the HDR is going to try and get detail in the silhouette like an old, like a normal camera would.
Yeah, so you've got to remember to go to the settings and dig into the camera settings or the settings.
Yeah, I think the camera app is kind of showing its age a bit, like. It needs to be modernized, like the Apple Camera app. It's good for being really simple, but there are so many settings that are kind of like important if you actually want to take pictures, and they're just not exposed in the actual camera. And on the XS and even more on the XS Max, they retain the aspect ratio of the viewport, but it just means you get more and more black that has nothing in it. Like, I like how, like, Halid, the third-party app, kind of puts those little meters in the notches. Like, they use the space a lot better than the iPhone camera, which are just kind of... You know, it's just plonked in the middle, and you've got a shutter button, and that's about it.
Yeah. By the way, like with these video formats, they give you some clues at how you're supposed to decide which one is for you. Like they say, how many megabytes a one minute video would be, and it goes from 40 megabytes to 400 megabytes, depending on what option you choose. And they also give you in parentheses descriptions of like what the benefit is. So they say default, which is 60 megabytes at 1080p. It's like by default, your 4K camera doesn't shoot 4K. You need to change it. So that's something. The 720p version is a space saver. It's clever. The non-default 1080p with higher frames per second is smoother, but I guess it's not a space saver. So it uses a third more space. 24 frames per second film style. 4K at 30 frames per second is higher resolution. And then 4K at 60 frames is higher resolution, smoother. It's like, you really got to think about what you want. And I'm doing 4K at 60, and I'm not getting the auto low light feature because that's not part of 60. It's only part of 30. It's just like, you got to really make some decisions there. Do you want smooth? You want smooth? You know, you want.
And also just raw vid. They don't include that in that description. But if you look at like comparison videos of shooting at 4K 30 and 4K 60, yes, at 60 you get a more frame rate, but in a lot of cases the 4K 30 actually just looks better. Yeah. Like, it's very, very weird how all the parameters change around as you flip between the options.
So I should probably use 4K at 30 and then have the auto low light feature on. That's like the
Especially if you're taking videos at night. Like, yeah, that's the most, and I think that's one of the biggest banners. Like you could say about this phone is that the low light photography is just way better than what the 10 is. Like, mm-hmm. just the bigger sensors. They have the HDR stuff. Like, you just see so much more in the darker pictures.
Yeah, and you get the option to turn off recording stereo sound. I'm not sure if the default's on or off, but you mentioned to me before that that's probably ideal for, like, interviews, spoken audio.
I mean, this podcast is mono, isn't it, for exactly that reason?
Yeah. So
stereo audio is cool, though. You were sharing some stereo audio videos you took, and it's kind of cool to hear where it comes from. And I assume they probably leave that on as standard, like on a fresh install, because it's one of the new features of the phone, so they want to promote it.
Yeah.
Most people aren't going to want to turn it off because they'll just think it's cool.
Yeah, our friend and former Happy Hour host, Scott Passimi, posted a video on Twitter that was just like, I have an iPhone XS, I'm talking over here, and it should come out of this side, and I'm over here. And it's like, it really did. And I was on my MacBook, and like, you know, the sound comes through the keyboard. It's like, you're in that part of my keyboard. Now you're in this part. Like, it really, the sound separation is there. It's harder to pick up on the iPhone, even though the iPhone has stereo separation. It's just like, you know, you can isolate it, I guess. But like, if you have AirPods or something in, you can really tell. And it's neat. Like, one thing I found, this is an example, like when I was out taking photos and videos, was a boat was going by. And it was kind of in the middle of me, and then it was like far away. And that's an example where you can probably pick up the sound of the boat, like in the water. As it moves, the sound does too, which is kind of neat. Like, I really like on the Apple TV when you move the focus of what icon you're on from left to right, it does that with your speakers too. It's like, gives you a sense of place with sound. So go camera, you know. I mean that was the big thing from the reviews too, is like that Apple kind of undersold it on stage, largely by not doing like year-over-year compares of the two. Like, they could even have said, this is the iPhone 8 photo, because it's the same as the 10, and this is the iPhone XS, you know. And like, but they didn't really do much of that at all, and I think that it's really easy to show a year-over-year improvement. The one thing I found noticeably was that, like, I saw people complain it was probably just about the blending, but like skin tones, to me they look more like what I see in person. the color and just like the way it looks. It's like the picture I take on a 10, it looks like what I'm used to, but on the 10S, it's like what I'm seeing in real life. And to me, that's a good thing. Like even the front-facing camera, you know, take a selfie, for example. It's like there's just more like orange and pink and red. It's like it's actually there than what you'd see before. It's almost like more saturated, I guess, which some people could complain about. But I thought it was like closer to real life that I see. So I thought that was kind of neat. But yeah, I mean, like I said, the redeeming thing for me is the camera. Like everything else I think will fade as like being different. Like maybe bigger, it could be worse in some situations, and I'm okay with it. But the camera is like undeniable. You know, even if you go from a 10 to a 10S and no screen size change, like the camera, you'll benefit from if you care about that. So.
And that's coming to the 10R, which is a lot cheaper than the max cost. So
yeah,
apart from the zoom camera, but the other camera is exactly the same. You get depth control. They do like fake portrait mode using Focuspix and stuff. So that phone is definitely shaping up to be very compelling for like the mass market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't want to lose the zoom to go to the 10R, and I wouldn't want to lose OLED to go to LCD on the 10R. Like even for the color, you know, the options you get, but. Over the weekend, I took one picture that used 2x zoom, and I did it on both the 10 and the 10S. And I showed someone that lives near me, and they were like, how did you get out in the water like that? Because it was of a bird, and it was like really far out there. And it's like, no, I was on the dock. I just used 2x zoom, which is not digitally and fake, and it's really good. So
yeah, I mean, I use 2x zoom all the time on the 10. Like, I like it a lot, but you can just look at the market, like, very few of the Android phones have dual lenses, and even the ones that do, most of them do like infrared lenses, or they do what like super like wide angle lenses rather than like zoom lenses. And I don't quite understand why, but obviously it can't be like people, you know, banging at the gates for it. I think for the $750 phone, just having on the one lens is fine because it's, you know, almost identical in every other respect.
9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. It's no secret that hiring the right talent for your company is hard. It can feel like a full-time job all on its own, but LinkedIn can take the guesswork out of hiring. That's because LinkedIn is more than the world's largest professional network. It's also a better way to find great talent. The way it works now is you post a job to a jobs board and hope you find the right person for your job. But if you think about it, how often do you check job boards? For most people, it's a pretty occasional thing, but there is a place where people go daily to grow professionally and explore job opportunities. In fact, 70% of the U.S. workforce is already there. It's LinkedIn. You already know LinkedIn as the world's largest professional network. And here's the thing. It's also a better way to find great talent. Just ask any of the hundreds of thousands of businesses who have posted on LinkedIn Jobs over the past year. And because LinkedIn considers skills, experiences, location, and more to match and promote your job to potential candidates, businesses are rating LinkedIn Jobs 40% higher than jobs boards at delivering quality candidates. 22 million professionals view and apply to jobs on LinkedIn every week in every industry, even yours and mine. If you're not using LinkedIn for your hiring needs, there's no better time to start than now. Just go to LinkedIn.com/happyhour and get a $50 credit toward your first job post. That's LinkedIn.com/happyhour for your $50 credit today. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, let's talk about the Apple Watch Series 4. We both have these, so we have even more to say here, I guess. I'm in the process of writing my review. I'm still kind of evaluating, of course, but I've had it since Friday, and so I've got a pretty good sense of what we're working with here. But just like in general, what's your takeaway of the Series 4?
You know, I really like the Series 4. I really, really do. But I wouldn't actually tell people that who have Series 3s that it's like super important. Like the screen size change is really, really nice. And then secondary to that, everything else is kind of like cherry on top. Like, and for me, I love it, right? Like That's why I've just been asking for a bigger screen on the same body for the whole for so long.
Yeah.
And everything else is great, and it's a bit faster. If you have anything other than a Series 3, I'd be like, yeah, definitely, this is time to, you know, get on board with this thing. Mm-hmm. If you have last year's model, I don't think it's like so like I've seen some people are like, this is like the iPhone 4, and it's like from the 3GS, the iPhone 4 was like ridiculous. They changed like everything. On the watch, I still kind of feel like it still feels like a genetic mutation of the same thing that came before. And I love it. Don't get me wrong, I really do. But remember, you have to remember, it's more expensive than what people paid for the Series 3 last year. And you don't get like contract benefits or anything. You have to buy it up front and stuff. So I wouldn't tell people to go and rush out, like drop everything and go and get it. But by far, this is like a really, really, really nice Apple Watch. Like, yeah. No question.
And the US now that LTE, you know, all four carriers do cellular on the watch. There are starting to be some contract benefits to it. Like, yeah, I mean, Series 3 was the first watch with LTE, so it's a new thing in general. But there are the same kind of annual upgrade plans. And maybe, I'm not sure they're all annual or not, but like at least where you can pay monthly for a watch, trade it in, get the new one the next year. So if you care a lot like I do, then you might actually be able to, like, you know, pay $15, $20, $30 a month and have a new watch every year with trade-in. And that's kind of neat. So I know people that have taken advantage of that this year that had Series 3 before, and now it's like, you know, don't want to spend $800, but I do want a new watch. And so be able to, you know, add $20 to your phone bill, it helps out, I think.
I bet Apple will start doing like a watch upgrade program as well in the not too distant future.
Yeah, it seems like that is beneficial the most whenever you have like a change from 10 to 10S where it's not dramatic. It's like there are feature benefits, but like not that you'd want to go through the hassle of selling your old phone or like paying out of pocket for a new one. But when the changes are – when you run out of like the obvious things like adding GPS, LTE, bigger, new design, you know, I think like sleep tracking is pretty obvious as a feature thing. When you run out of those and it's like just smaller year-over-year changes, an upgrade plan probably helps you retain like – the same customers that might sit it out otherwise. I mean, you've always got like first time buyers and long term upgraders, but like, you know, at some point the upgrade program would probably help people like me to keep upgrading too. The headline I've got on my draft so far is Apple Watch Series 4, beautiful design and visible features. And like the description I've got is like my reminder is features that don't matter look the best, and the features that matter the most are invisible. And it's a little bit of what we discussed before with like, you know, features that are kind of insurance. Like, are you going to notice the heart rate alerts if you never need them? Fall detection or EKG, ECG, which isn't even on the watch yet.
And fall detection is disabled for most people, like automatically.
Yeah, you've got to opt into it if you're under 65. It's like those features are important and like critical, and in some, like, they have some responsibility for selling the watch, but like you don't see them, and best case scenario, you never see them. And if you're like me and you go from a Series 3, and like you are too, you know, you like the way it looks, so you go from a Series 3 to a Series 4. I've heard people say they think it's a lot faster, like it's night and day. To me, I think that might be like the placebo that like I've got both side by side now and I can't spot a difference except for
I think it's faster.
Well, I mean, it's not slower, but it's not like going from the first generation to a Series 3 or Series 4. And that's like you there's a bottleneck that you break.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
There's nothing like functional. I'm not like replacing janky animations with smoothness for the first time, or like, you know, functionally, I'm not getting anything out of this that I wasn't before. The features that are on paper there, like, I hope I don't need them. Even things like, you know, the improved like accelerometer and gyroscope, you know, like double the data points, you know, that enable fall detection. And I imagine it improves the workout, you know, metrics. But it's like, functionally, it doesn't fix something that was broken for me. So, like, all those
things. Yeah, it's kind of irrelevant, really.
Yeah. All those things, like, there's nothing functionally that my Series 4 can do that my Series 3 couldn't do. And they still sell a Series 3 for a reason. Like, it's a really good watch, whether you have LTE or not. It's just, like, the way it looks is the big thing to me. And it's, like, that isn't, like, a life or death feature, you know? And it's even hard to, like, measure it with a number, but it's definitely there. And it's, like, that's what makes me love this watch.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think what I was trying to get in my opening thing is that if someone came up to me for Christmas and like, I don't want to spend loads of money. Is the extra, you know, 100 and change to go from, like, I can get this $279 Series 3 or I can get this $400 Series 4. Like, should I go for it? And I'd probably tell people, you know, if you're price conscious, then the Series 3 is perfectly fine. I think that's what I was getting at there, is that, yes, I really, really value the nicely rounded screen and it's bigger and it goes to the edges and it looks beautiful and it feels a fraction thinner on the wrist, not loads, a fraction. For some reason, I feel like it's lighter. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but it just feels a lot nicer. But I would struggle to say that that is like a $120 jump for, you know, the common garden person who doesn't care about, like, oh, this complication is now 20 pixels further down. And to me, that's like night and day, right? And that's what we've been asking for years. But I think for an average person, they're not going to be as, like, overwhelmed by it. They'll just be like, yeah, it's okay. We'll just carry on.
Yeah, and you can get the Series 3 with LTE still. So it's like, if that's one of the things you care about, like, you can't get steel in the Series 3 anymore unless you buy, like, secondhand or you know, like last-minute stock. But you can still say, like, you can get all the benefits, like, functionally of Series 3 with LTE because it's still in the market for a pretty good price. So, yeah, I'm right there with you on that one. It's like, I'm definitely the person to get Series 4, but, like, there are people that if you're price conscious, like, yeah, I mean, even $279, that's the starting price, right? Like, that's not cheap. It's not $100. It's not $150. Like, it's almost $300. So, and with tax, it probably is. So it's like, I agree with you there. Like, there's a reason it's still on the market. The thing with Series 4 that's got me so happy, I wanted one on Friday, and mine that I ordered for a pre-order wasn't coming until it arrived on Monday, like sooner than I thought, but not day one. And I wanted to get a head start on experiencing the new watch to write about. And actually, I had a lot of trouble doing that. Like Best Buy, I had a pre-order that didn't arrive, and then I had a store pickup that they sold before I got there, even though they weren't supposed to. So I was like, what do you have? And they had 44 millimeter gold aluminum and 40 millimeter space gray. And I was like, I'll do the 40 millimeter, like, try that out. And so for the first few days, I was wearing that. And I couldn't get by with a 38 like you do. Like, that's made for you. For me, it's like way too dainty for my wrist size. And there's no way I would give up the function of the larger screen for 38 for my fit. And with the 40 millimeter Series 4, it still felt like, wow, this is really cool that they've gone edge to edge. And there's these two new watch faces. Like new styles of complications and everything. But it's like, it's a little bit smaller than the 42, like elements on the screen are pinched in some, like the fonts on my Series 3 42 millimeter are larger and like more legible. And so I was impressed by like the edge to edge and how it's like a smaller casing, but almost the same size screen. But when my 44 millimeter arrived, like my watch, I was like, this is a whole new watch in comparison, because I've had the same 42 millimeter size for all 3 years until now.
Yeah, it really depends what you're coming from, right? Like,
sure.
For me, the difference between the old 38 and now the new like 30% bigger is like night. It's like I'm like jumping for joy over it.
Yeah.
Every time I see the app icon when you get a notification come in that's only in there for like a third of a second, I'm like, this is so much bigger. It's like, even typing in my PIN code in the morning, it's like, these buttons are actually tappable now. The honeycomb grid, which I've complained about so many times on the show for just being slightly too small, like all the icons are slightly too small, they're finally like perfectly sized. I'm like, but then I showed at the weekend, my dad has a 42 millimeter Series 3, and I was like, Dad, look at this, I got the new one. He was like, yeah, it's all right. Because, I mean, the screen, he doesn't get the screen size difference. I'm like, look at this. He's like, yeah, whatever. You're getting, for me, it's like a massive jump to go from that. But, and then for you, I assume it's the same going from the 42 to the 44.
Exactly. I was impressed with edge to edge on the 40, but I wasn't like blown away by how much is on this, like how big it is. And on the 44, it's like, it feels like one of the round watch faces that are just like really big and take up your whole wrist. So it's like a fashion, you know, thing. It feels like one of those, but it's the Apple Watch. It's like, ah, you're taking those on now. And it's just like, and on the Infograph modular face, my senior complication is the activity one. And the numbers were just like not that legible on the 40 for me. But on the 44, I can glance and see what they are. So it's like, it's functionally what I need too. And maybe, like, going back to what we discussed about Series 3, maybe if you buy the little bit pricier 42mm, you're in good, you know, hands. But if you buy the 38, the entry level one, maybe you should reconsider and go for a Series 4. Because of the size difference and how.
Yeah, and obviously that just very much depends on, you know, what your hands can support. Like, I said it all the time. While I had the 38, I kind of did it begrudgingly. I was like, I'd much rather have the nicest, bigger screen one, but my wrist is just not big enough for it. And it's like, right. I think the 42 is, like, a fine size, but if you've got smaller wrists and, you know, the jump in difference there is a lot more substantial, so maybe you should actually consider spending the extra money.
Yeah.
I want to
discuss the gold stainless steel collar now.
Yeah, because I went boring and just got the same finish as I always do. But you got the new one.
Yeah. It was a late-minute decision for me. It was Michael Stieber sending me Hodinkee's hands-on coverage of the gold stainless steel. And I was like, that's actually pretty cool. Like, I think I could live with that. And in person, like, the way it looks, I'm really happy with it. I've got the gold Milanese band with it, too. And, like, I could never imagine buying a gold watch before. Like, it just wasn't for me. But, like, the way that this looks is subtle enough that I'm really into it. And I'm very much blonde and, like blonde hair, blonde. And it feels like it, like, matches my hair, like, the tone and everything. kind of neat. And I didn't get this with the 40mm with Space Gray, and, like, I really didn't get any comments on it. Like, I even, like, I checked my dad, and I don't think he got what I was showing him. But he hasn't seen the 44mm yet. But, like, my wife, like, she saw it, she's like, oh, that's really pretty. That's a really pretty watch. And she has the white ceramic 42mm Series 3. And then I was out running with a friend, and his wife was like, oh, is that the new watch? That's really pretty. Like, people keep saying it's pretty, you know? And, yeah. Like, as my male watch, like, you know, it's unisex, but, like, it's jewelry. Like, it is a pretty watch in a way that I think the silver one was, and the space black one, you know, talking of the still ones, like, they were. But, like, there's just something about the gold finish that is, like, you know, more jewelry than ever, I think. And you know, I mean, the original editions were, like, that was their whole point, you know. But I'm
really, and you have the Milanese band, right? Yeah,
I do, yeah, and I've got the space, the black or the space black pen on the way that I think I'll use most of the time. But the Milanese loop, like, it's not bad. It's not like working out with a link bracelet is bad news. It's heavy, but, like, the Milanese loop, I think it. I don't know. Maybe I'll wear it more than I thought I would.
I always see the Milanese as, like, the band that I'm most envious that I don't actually have. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just really cool. Like, the magnetic, yeah. You can just. You slide it anywhere you want and it just sits there. The combination of, like, the gold chassis and then, like, the Milanese watch, I think it's a great kind of like fusion of, like, old watchy style jewelry and actually, like, modern technology, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that's a lot of the things on this watch. Like, you get the nice smooth curves that kind of suggest an older style dial, but also, you know, at the end of the day, it's a smartwatch that does all this stuff. Like, they really, like, blend it well together.
Yeah.
And just for can you explain the difference? Because the old style Milanese versus the new style Milanese, can you bring that up? Because I don't think people have mentioned that very much.
If you have a 40mm or 44mm Milanese loop versus 38 and 42, which I imagine will be phased out, the old style Milanese, you couldn't take the loop part of it out of the bottom clasp where it loops around. The top one is fixed in place, but the bottom one is, like, it goes around in a circle like the sport loop bands do. And then the magnet catches the other side of it and it's in place. You couldn't pull the loop all the way out and have one empty connector and then one connector that's got the loop attached to it. It was, like, a little bit bigger or something where it wouldn't come out. On the 40mm and 44mm, the whole strap comes out and you can have an empty lug, like loose lug. And my first guess on that was, they changed that so you can lay it flat on air power. It's like,
and so this is like the only, because obviously the sport bands are the same, just relabeled, right? Like, the old 38s are the same as the new 40s. They just changed the labels on the outside of the boxes.
Yep.
So whereas the Milanese actually has, like, a functional difference where the end of the band can basically is small enough now to actually fall through and you can pull it out easy.
Yeah. Now, the little magnet, like, can wrap around itself and stop it from pulling out, like, because it's technically, like, wrapped around the loop, the lug. But, like, it's, you can make that not happen. I'm not sure that, like, if I had if Air Power actually existed and I had one, then I would unloop my watch every night. And honestly, I preferred it before when it was, like, you could loosen it all the way and then slide it off your wrist. Now it's, like, I need to loosen it almost all the way, but not have it come out so that I have to, like, refasten it. So I think, like, functionally, without Air Power existing, it's a worse change. It's a change for the worst. But, like, if Air Power comes out, when Air Power comes out, if you have a Milanese loop, you can unloop it and lay it flat. And the only other
without having to do the buttons to actually take it off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, which is, like, if you have link bracelet, they recommend you remove one of the, you know, you can change the links on them, like do it that way, to lay it flat. And like, they actually have a guide on that, like, how to take it off. And that's what they recommend, I think. It's crazy. But and I don't think any of the other ones do, like, the modern buckle comes off in half. Like, none of the other ones are closed. I guess the sport loops are closed, but, like, they're flexible enough that you could maybe lay it flat. I don't know. But yeah, that's a change. And you can't undo the sport loop ones, even the new sizes. They've got, like, a plastic bit that's wider than the lug is, the opening. So,
yeah, not only is Air Power mentioned in the pamphlet for the 10S.
For 10, yes.
Yeah. It's also, they also are adjusting these bands just subtly.
Yeah.
For the still non-existent product.
The signs are there. Well, while we're on the topic of that, you know, they added portrait orientation nightstand mode to watchOS a while ago, which was, like, you know, clearly for Air Power. It was like, so you can still do Air Power, lay it flat, but then get the nightstand mode look to it. I mean, it also benefits the docks that are not sideways, like the original docks that came out, but besides that.
Yeah, well, I have, like, the elevation dock from 12 South that's just exactly on. And I got that before nightstand mode was even a thing, and then now they've added portrait. It's just, oh, that's nice, it works.
Yeah. So with nightstand mode, the digital crown becomes the stop your alarm from alarming you, and then the side button, that's the official name, is the snooze button, which is clever because they both stick out. On the Series 4 watch, the crown sticks out the same, but the side button is flat, and it's, like, less effective as a snooze. Like, I was half asleep when it happened because my alarm was waking me up, but I was, like, reaching for it. I was like, where's that button? Oh, they got to click it. It's still there, but that's the only time I've been bothered by the side button not being, like, a sticking out button anymore. Actually, like, it's nearly invisible now. Like, he's kind of got a feel for it.
Do you want? I'm not sure if I'm overreacting it, but if you were brand new to the Apple Watch, would you even think that was a button? Like, I wonder if people, because it's so flush. I wonder if people just kind of think it's like a little speaker or something that's just a weird shape.
Well, if you're brand new to the Apple Watch, then you have that nice setup guide that if you pay attention to, it shows you all the things.
True, but I just think it's funny that, like, you have the sticky out, clicky clicky crown. And then you still have, like, the clickiness of the thing, but it doesn't stick out at all. Like, not even, like, a fraction. It's just completely flat.
Yeah. It's not, like, recessed, but it's, like, even with the side.
Yeah.
I like that because the watch is a computer that tries to look like a watch. And the crown is a throwback to, like, actual crowns. The side button is not a throwback. The side button is, like, borrowed from the iPhone. It looks like the old iPhone's side buttons.
It's like a concession because they needed an extra button.
Right, you need something there. And this is progress because it's like, it's still there functionally and there's an outline, but it's not like the button side and the other side. And by the way, like, the other side looks really good now too because the microphone, they went from 2-to-1, which is curious, but they moved it to between the crown and the side button. And I thought that'd be kind of ugly because it's like showing. But it's small enough that I don't think I noticed very much.
Yeah.
The speakers look excellent. I think the speakers look better on – maybe they look better on the 40 because they almost go full width. They're like centered, but they go a long way. They're the same size on the 44mm and they're like – they go less, you know, to the end.
They look a bit more like while they're here.
Yeah, but to be the old way was like they were stacked and like one of them was like more inward than the other one, like by a lot. It was on the curve. And the new way is they're side by side. You know, like if you're like making like an emoticon of like eyes or something. I think it looks way better, way better.
The back as well, like the new redesigned back, just the old one looks so like 1980s control panel-y, and this new one is just like concentric circles, and it's just so much nicer.
The old backs on steel and ceramic and the original edition gold, they were very pretty. They were pretty too, anyway, like with the four circles. Because
they were ceramic.
Yeah, you had more steel than you get now on Series 4 because only the circle was the ceramic part. The part that wasn't the circle was, you know, steel or gold or ceramic, I guess. The new way is like the whole of the back is part of the glass, and it's ceramic on all the models. It's like you've got less aluminum now on your watch than you had before. It's like almost like the iPhone 8s, how they have the aluminum bands, and the XR has aluminum bands, but then like glass back, and so it still feels very nice. With the watch now, you've got a lot less of like the whatever material, you know, steel, aluminum, and then almost all the back of it is ceramic now, and they look really good. So,
like, yeah, and they just simplified. You've gone from four of the like windows for the light sensor thingies to just one. Like, it just feels so, it looks so much nicer.
Yeah, like I'm holding the 40mm aluminum in my hand, and to me the back of it, like that material look, because it's shiny. Like, I wouldn't mind if that was the whole watch, but then it'd be more expensive, I guess. But like,
yeah, then you're basically getting a space black watch.
Yeah, yeah, so it's really nice though, and it's the same way. Like, you don't see it on your wrist because it's covered, but like on the gold one, I mean, it's all black, and so you don't have that you know, the gold on the back of it in the same way. But it looks really good. I like that. And I really like I like black and gold as a combination. I think that's a neat combination. There have been complaints about complication availability on the new faces because developers need to make them from scratch, I guess. They're taller now, including Apple.
The image assets are different, and I think Apple chose, rather than stretch the existing complications, just to not offer them until developers provide new assets, and also take the opportunities to support the gorges with the cool colors and the little
gauges. Yeah,
yeah. I was say the wrong one. Yeah, the gauges rigid, yeah. And the little like the high and the low numbers, like all of that stuff. I think they just said, we'll just, rather than kind of jerry fit like the old things to it, which they probably could have done if they wanted to. They just said, no, we'll just make them completely separate template designs, so you have to wait for app updates. And I think the biggest omission here is that Apple did not port all of its complications, so yeah. Things like Home, you can't get on the Infograph face, or Messages doesn't have an Infograph complication yet. Like, some pretty big apps Apple has not provided, either in WatchOS 5.0 or 5.1.
Mm-hmm. And then
as of the current beta.
Yeah, as a beta one. And then if you have an app that you use and rely on, which I know people don't love Apple Watch apps, but I use a lot of them, and I think more people do than you think. If it hasn't been updated yet, then it looks like the old screen size on the new screen, like it's letter surrounded by box. And it's like, oh, that's what a 42mm watch would look like, you know, if this was that. Or on the 40mm, oh, that's what a 38 would look like if it was in this casing.
And all of Apple's apps fill the screen, but some of them haven't quite been audited properly for the new, like, masking of the corners.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Like having the 40 was a neat part of this experience, and in writing my review, I'll be more informed because like I went to the calendar view, and the default isn't the month view with the days of the month and the weeks, but you can go there; it's part of it. And on the 40mm, the 30th day of September was clipped. Like, you could see the 0 and part of the 3, but it was cut off. Like, this is the whole argument against circular watches: is text will get clipped. Well, as they went all the way to the curve, the text of that was clipped, and they can shrink it. You know, they don't do a safe area, but they could work with it within one.
Yeah, and they have APIs to like tell you where the best place to put them is and stuff. Like,
yeah,
but they obviously haven't done it. I've noticed similar on like the heart rate app. The current heart rate is very often clipped at the left hand side. Mm-hmm.
And if you screenshot it, it's all there. Like, it's not missing and stuff.
Yeah, it's like the iPhone X notch, isn't it? Like, mm-hmm. It's drawn behind it, but it's obviously like cut off by the physical screen.
Yeah, and that didn't happen on the 38 or 42 because they were within a box, and then on the 44 it doesn't happen because, you know, I guess they prioritize that. I don't know.
And I think that's pretty shoddy work, right?
Like, yes.
I wasn't expecting to have that happen.
Yeah.
I will give them, I've decided, I will give them the 0.1 when the 0.1 comes out. If they are still clipped and crappy like that, I'll be very upset. Because I can see maybe that the hardware was worked on kind of in secret a bit, and like the people in charge of some of these apps weren't to know that this is exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like a miscommunication, similar to the complications, right, where some of the apps aren't there.
Well, so, there's some stuff in Xcode where like the simulator isn't what the actual watch looks like, right?
Yeah, yeah. And there's some, I mean, it's still bad, right? Like, I don't want to excuse them completely, but I will give them until the 0.1 comes out. And if by the time the 0.1 comes out, they've fixed, you know, the vast majority of these weird issues, I'll give it to them.
I'm not optimistic, though. Like, I don't feel like that calendar, the calendar view is from, like, watch, you know, OS 1.0. I don't think.
Well, you can't even select a different day. Like, wherever you tap, it just zooms in on the same place still.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will.
Yeah, like, but that heart rate, like, come on. The first number of the two digit reading of the heart rate of the history is cut off. Like, hello?
Yeah, I'm gonna rely on you to test it there, because I won't have a 40 millimeter for long.
I will keep you in the loop on those ones.
Although, because your calendar doesn't begin with what is it, Sunday, that you didn't have the problem because the 30th didn't fall on that row.
Yeah, although it will happen when it ticks over to a different month that has them in a different place.
Yeah, and another thing I noticed was on the infograph face, one that leaked, if you have a calendar complication as one of your corner complications, and you have the infamous no more events text on the 40 millimeter, it was no more event dot dot dot, maybe it was event dot dot dot, and like the S was gone. I think it was no more even dot dot dot.
One of the corner curved ones,
huh?
Is that one of the ones on the corners?
Yep.
Right, yeah, because obviously the one on the dial has enough space to actually say the full thing.
So if you do one of the corner ones, it's going to be truncated as the default, annoying at that, like, no more events text that Apple puts for you. Like, it could be blank, but they put no more events. That's okay, whatever. On the 44 millimeter, it's not truncated. So I think I have some
quick aside. I think you should say no more events today if you had at least one event on that day already.
Sure, yeah.
But if you haven't, like what I have, I don't really use the calendar that much. I have maybe like one event in it a week. So if like for the days where I've got no events at all, it's just big blank. And then on the day where you have an event, it shows the event. When the time goes over, it then changes no more events for today. But just saying no events today forever is just stupid.
Yeah, it's dumb. Especially when it's in the tick marks of the watch. It's like, oh.
Yeah, because I would use that. But when I don't have any events, I don't want it to say no events today. I just want it to be the tick marks full. And then when an event comes up, you know, replace the ticks.
Yeah. Yeah. So next thing is something. Well, last thing I'll say is on the watch face is the infograph modular, and all of the new, like, edge-to-edge, like, fire and water. And then it is a new thing to color in the beta version of watchOS, where it goes full screen or you get a circle. Those are well considered, I think. All the other ones feel like they need more attention. Like, the Siri face is fine, I guess, too. But, like, most of the other ones feel like they're – like, if you look in the watch app, they almost look like they're, like, apps that haven't been updated yet, the way that they're inset. On the actual device, like, you often get, like, the curve of the bottom complications instead of a flat one. For activity, they remove the background gray of it, but it's still, like, flat on the bottom. And you don't fit anything more on existing watch faces. They've just been like slightly modified, and they do an interesting thing where you know, they curve. Sometimes they curve the bottom one only. Sometimes they curve the top one too. And sometimes they curve the top one if it's text, but not if it's like a circle. Like it's not consistent. And I don't think like if they were designing it from scratch, they would do this.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. So to me,
I really like infograph modular. By the way,
me too. Like, which watch face are you using the most right now? Is that it?
At the moment, I'm using Infograph Modular the most. I mean, it's still early enough that I'm kind of flicking between loads of different options, really, like just trying out all the new.
And your old face was numerals, right?
Yeah, my primary. Up to now, like Series 3 and before, I would use numerals and Activity Digital.
Okay.
And like, if I really wanted to do a workout and I needed a reminder for like the evening, I put it on Activity Face. And then when I'd done all my exercise today, I'd flick it back to numerals. So.
Yeah.
But I've been predominantly using Infograph Modular because I really, really, really like the center complication which is like really big and it's like an arbitrary view and they can just draw whatever they want. And Apple does some really, really nice graphs in there. Like I've been using the weather one. It shows like the next 5 hours. You get 5 hour by hour weather forecast with the little images and the temperatures. The activity one's really good, where you have like separate graphs for a move and exercise and stand. Like that graph there is almost better than the visualization they give you in the activity app itself on the watch. Yeah. Like they've really done a really, really good job with that middle section.
Yeah, I used to use for a long time. I would use the Siri Watch Face once they added activity as a tile there, because I would often see it and I could always see the date and the temperature, which are two things I care about, because it's like, what is today's date when I'm filling out paperwork, like signing my kid in a daycare? I need to look at my watch, see the date. Okay, there it is. And the temperature is useful for me because it's like, how do I need to dress my kids today? So I always want the temperature there too. It's like as important as the date for me now. And then I would use the before that I would use Activity Digital, and because I care about my rings and like when I'm dieting and exercising, which I've been doing this month, and it's really important to me. I don't feel like the Siri Watch Face has gotten the watchOS 5 benefits yet that they've shown on stage. Like I don't have anything except for Things that shows up there, and Things is like struggling to do a really good job of not having like redundant information, or like it's not great yet. So the Siri Watch Face I've kind of abandoned until it blossoms into what it's supposed to do with watchOS 5. So I'm back on Activity Digital on Series 3. On Series 4, it's like that face is just a little bit larger, but like nothing special. So I couldn't wait for one to turn an infograph that leaked into like my watch face and have things I actually care about. Right now it's a little bit tricky because there's not enough complications to fill out all the corners.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with the infograph analog is that you just kind of, you fill out some and then it's like, I don't really have great options to put in the many places. And like Apple loves to use like air quality and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like, I don't care about that. Yeah. Those stats.
I'm using those as fillers right now. but I've kind of recreated infograph modular, and I didn't use modular by itself really. Like it's kind of ugly to me.
Infograph I always modular, thought normal modular was really ugly.
Yeah. Infograph modular is beautiful. Like it's just, it's well done. Like it's really nice. I've got the date on the top because you can't put anything else there. It's either on or off. It's the day of the week and the date. The time, obviously. And then in that smaller complication, I've got the temperature, and it has the gauge of the low and the high. Beneath that in the big wide one, the chart one, I've got activity, which is really neat because it's got the number for each, you know, what would be a ring, and then tick marks for like a graph. And I love that. And then I've got my activity rings too, because like the ring mentality, complete the rings works for me. So I've got that as the center bottom one. I've got workout as the workout launcher. I did that with the activity face too. And then I've got like one more to work with. And I've been changing it from like wind speed to like, is that really helpful for me? No, because it's always like 5 or 10 miles an hour. Weather conditions, but it's like, usually it's just cloudy or sunny. It doesn't really do much for me. I can kind of look outside and see, or launch the weather app. But what I've been using is Things, mentioned a lot. And they're one of the few apps that have infograph complications. And I never used a Things complication on any other watch faces. Like, it just wasn't pretty to me. It's neat on the Siri watch face, but you can't control when it appears. Like, it's intelligent about it. But in this case, it's like, to me, it's like the productivity ring. Like, it's right there next to my activity ring. And it's like a blue ring that gets completed as I go through my tasks for the day. And it starts out at zero and you know, goes all the way there. But that is like the replacement for activity for me on Series 4. And I'm really happy with it. With the infograph analog version, I've got the temperature and the date presented. And for the top complication that can put text around the tick marks, I'm using Things there too. And it's kind of neat because it has like my next task in text there.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, whenever you complete it, they do I can probably fake it right now and see, but they do have text there that's like the equivalent of no more events. It is all done. And that's not like the worst, but again, I wish they could just have nothing there and go back to tick marks, like, you know, because you've got a complete circle.
I really like the gauges. Yeah, those ones.
Ruder.
Gauges. I really, really like how they look. I'm a bit upset with the weather one. So you just have weather temperature, and on the online websites, they have like blue and oranges and reds. In day-to-day use, I've found that it's mostly like this limey green color for like average temperatures, which is like 12 to 15 Celsius.
If I just said like what temperature is green to you? Like what does green mean? Like ideal, I guess?
Battery life. That's what I always keep thinking in my head. Like I don't get what they're going for there. Like on Series 3, the weather temperature was always blue. Blue to me is like synonymous weather. The weather icon's blue. Like I think it should. I think the rainbow should be from blue to red. I don't know why there's greens here. What they seem to be using blue for is like freezing temperatures, like 0 degrees Celsius and stuff. And like to me, it just doesn't work. Like I tweeted that I hate it being green all the time, and everyone replied to me like, "Yeah, it depends what the temperature is." I'm like, "Yeah, I know, but the right. the current temperature." It should be blue. That's just how it works in my head. It should go from like a pale white, which is like freezing, because, you know, snowy, freezing, mm-hmm. to blue, which is like blue skies, you know, normal daily temperatures, to orange through to red when it gets like really hot in like the summer.
Yeah.
This green color, it's like I'm changing like my fuel tank and stuff. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. To me, green is like, it's like the ideal temperature. So like what you might set your thermostat to, you know, maybe like in Fahrenheit. So at first, like I didn't really get the full effect of what you were showing me because it was in Celsius. When I saw more examples in Fahrenheit, I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty bad. But like to me, like a lot of people set their thermostat to around 72 for like the cold temperature and like comfortable temperature, at least where I live. And it's like, to me, like if you're going to do green for that. But even that's like warm outside. So it's red and orange and yellow. But like the green is like I saw people like in the 40s was the green, like 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and like to me 40 degrees is like put a jacket on, like at least a light jacket, and so you want to see blue for that and not green's like, you know, just don't worry about what you put on, like, you know. So I agree with that. I doubt that changes as weird as it is, but it is worth mentioning though. The other thing is, I can't wait for them to be more Apple complications, like, and maybe like I wish that all of the corner complications on Infograph did something besides like put the icon big there. Like you can do one for workout, I think, but it's just like the big icon like you'd get from Infograph Modular. I wish they all had some kind of a take on the gauges or like textures in some way. Although
yes, it makes more sense on some than others, of course.
Yeah. So. There's no, like, one of the complaints is like there's no complication for a lot of these things. There's no podcast complication yet on that face.
Messages, I think, is a really big one. Like, yeah. They could have two new messages, for instance, or mm-hmm. it light up when you've got an unread message and you just can't even get to it.
For the music, I do launch music before a workout a lot. So, like, it would make sense to have that on my watch face. Like, tap that, go back to the watch face, tap the workout, and there we go. But I don't like that it says Apple Music.
Yeah.
No, I have an icon for that. I don't need a label. Like, we don't do labels here. What is this? You know, the iPhone? So, yeah. But I'm so happy with Infograph Modular that I don't care that Infograph itself is, like, a little bit challenging to design the right way for me. Last thing I'll say is that on the gold stainless steel, there is often the option for gold color of the watch face in some way between white and red where it starts. I'm not sure if that's true of the aluminums as well.
It's definitely not on my. It's nothing not on mine. I don't.
Right, but if you have a gold aluminum, maybe it is.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Yeah. But on my space gray card, I don't get it.
Yeah. But I'm able to match the color match the tick marks to be gold, and then the text is white, so it kind of like stands out even more if you're doing one of those complications. But all in all, I mean, like I said, like the features are. It's not functional. It's not like I can't do something with this watch that I couldn't do before. It's still LTE, same storage for me, and like same material for me. It's like I can't do anything different, but just the way it looks and works and feels is just way better. Like, and for me,
I don't want to call it like indulgence, but do you know what I mean? It's like the cherries on top. Like,
yeah,
they've just kind of finessed everything.
Yeah. And I can see them taking this form factor and then iterating like they did with the first one. And then they added GPS, then LTE, you know. And I can see them doing this and they're like, now we're going to do sleep tracking and now we're going to do an always-on display of some sort, even if it's just for the time. But like this is the new form factor for a while, you know, like for the next, you know, however many years.
And to end on a positive, they finally fixed the Siri waveform.
Yeah, this was so weird. It's like – you know, it's been a running theme of this podcast. It's like they broke it. They haven't fixed it yet. And Simulator, it was like last weekend, a week before last weekend, we were chatting. And I said, I was just like shocked. And I was like, have you seen in Simulator the Siri waveform is responsive? And I was like, oh, you know, it could just be fake in the simulator. So we opened up the Series 3 simulator. It's canned, like in real life. It's like, maybe it's just... It's like more realistic for a watch that's already out, and like they're faking it on the Series 4.
It's just like glitched or something.
Yep. Turns out it's actually responsive again. So whenever you make your voice do voice sounds, the waveform animates, and when you're silent, the waveform is flat, like it should be.
And only on Series 4 for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why it's not on the previous models.
You needed more RAM and the S4 chip and.
No, there's no really, like, it's literally just the same animation, just driven by something that isn't time. Like, it's driven by volume. I don't know. But I'm so happy it's there, because it makes such a difference. The dictation interface is still a canned video, so Apple get on that. But Siri UI, finally up to scratch with, like, every other single one of their platforms that have a screen.
Whenever it was animated or responsive on the first watch in WatchOS 1, it was also a different animation. Like, the drawing was different. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, it embraced that there was a flat line beneath it. It was like, I mean, I guess it was barred from iOS, but then they changed it on iOS, and then it, like, hid that there was a flat line beneath it. It was, like, you know, oval, and then, like, wrapped up on the sides. And they just never optimized for that animation. The new one is great, and it does feel really good. Like, that's one area where we knew all along that if the animation was responsive to your voice, it would feel more like one-to-one input, and that's the effect that it has. Like, I've done side-by-side tests of Siri on both watches, and it's like it just feels faster, even if it's transcribing and doing the action in the same amount of time. It's a better feel to it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because even the old video was just even the canned video was like laggy. It was just like really slow and like duh, 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 duh. Whereas this one like feels really fresh and obviously it feels alive, right? Because it actually responds to you. Like, it's so much better.
Yeah, I want to mention the crown, because the crown has haptic feedback now, and I've got thoughts on that. I think you do too.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. What they described on stage was like when you're on an app like the podcast app or the music app, and you've got this album art of cards, it'll click with each one, which makes sense. In practice, they do that. But they also, in the absence of some card form like that, like the Siri Watch Face cards, they just tick with each, like, tick on the crown, I guess. Like, each rotation is like a physical click. And to me, you can do one or the other, but not both, without it being weird. Because in the podcast app, music app, it feels like you're clicking what's on the screen. It's the crown's like responding to, like, you're flipping a card over, not the crown itself clicking. But when you're in Control Center, for example, it's not mapped to the tiles on Control Center. It's mapped to the crown rotation, and so it's like click 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 with like a little bit of scroll. And to me, it's just like disorienting that you've got two different models for how it clicks, and it's just like overdone. It's like if you were on Safari on your phone and the Taptic Engine clicked as you like flicked up the screen, like you don't get that. You don't get like a sound effect like swish for like, you know, scrolling really fast. And you can turn it on or off. You can't have like just the card clicks but not the tick clicks. I think it's a little bit of a mistake, and they've kind of overdone it there.
Yeah, I agree. And like, the iPhone's a perfect comparison. Like, if you go in the clock app and you go to timer and you get the three reels for minutes, hours, and seconds, and you scroll them, you get a little haptic feedback, right? Because you're clicking between different options. It's like, but if you're just scrolling Safari or scrolling mail, like all your emails, you don't get a click every single time you go past an email, or it doesn't just click endlessly to ad nauseum. It just shuts up unless you're in those precise like controls that require precise adjustments, right? Mm-hmm. And the watch does the precise adjustment ones, like when you're changing complications, you get a little tick, tick, tick every time the complication zone changes, and that's cool. Or like when you're scrolling through the little album artwork, or if you're, you know, setting a time on the watch and you have those reels, it all works and it feels really nice. And then you're just scrolling like a notification that's three pages long in terms of like screen height, but there's no like delineation of anything there. And it just fires at you constantly. And it's like, what? Like, it's so weird. And in some situations, it even changes how the scrolling works. Like, with haptic crown disabled, because you can turn it off in the settings, thankfully, if you don't like it, it works exactly like the old watches do, where you scroll a little bit and it one-to-one tracks. In some contexts, and I haven't quite worked out a pattern here, and maybe this is one of those things where it's like the clipping that I haven't got around to like doing it all properly.
Right.
In some places, it actually changes how you scroll. When you're just scrolling like what should be a free-form view, like, and I've noticed this when you get a notification, you scroll and it kind of moves like 10 pixels at a time. And it does animate between them, but it's not following your finger. Like, it's like you're jumping invisibly to like these invisible little like steps. And so not only do you get the weird like feelings that are like inconsistent, you also get like the actual scrolling behavior to be weird as well. And I find that sometimes the way that it adjusts the scrolling makes it feel laggier than what it actually is. I was like, this feels slow. This feels like it's not keeping up with me. And then you turn off the haptic crown and it's like perfectly in track with your finger. Like, they definitely need to reconsider that. And maybe they will. Maybe. Like, if they just refined it to only working in those places where you really are adjusting between a finite set of like distinct values, it would be so much better. And you'd still get the nice touches when it was there. But you don't need it like just when you're scrolling for no, like, when you're scrolling and there's no clear like separator or like stop point, it should just not do it.
Yeah.
But it should only click when you're like going, if there's a list of 10 items and you're aligning with each one, it should go click, 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 click. But when you're just scrolling like an endless list, there's no need for it to just click constantly at you. Like, when it's doing that, it almost feels like it's broken and it's like firing wrongly.
Yeah.
Until you actually work out that that's just what it's supposed to be doing.
Right. It isn't like loud. Like, it isn't like audible. You just feel it. But it is there. And I think the closest thing to it on the iPhone, and I've seen some third-party apps go overboard with this lately. Like, I think the Tweetbot beta might have this. And I think Overcast recently did it. But, like, just, like, adding haptics. And I don't know why they're doing it now. Like, haptics have been on the phone since, what, the 6S? But just, like, now apps are getting haptic feedback in places where it shouldn't be, like, for the sake of having haptics. And it's, like, tapping a button, like, play pause. I don't think that should be a haptic because, you know, it's different, like it makes sense in some places, but not like tapping an icon. And on the iPhone, like if you had like every button tap was like a click, it would be like manipulating like a keyboard of some sort. Like if the keyboard itself like physically tapped you every time you did a letter click, like that would be overboard, I think. And that's what this crown thing is like. I've not turned it off because I do enjoy when it's like timed well. But I'm not a fan of the like overboard click 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 for the rotation stuff. So,
and it's not bad enough for me to want to turn it off at the moment.
Yeah,
but it is annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think I've got anything else to. One thing I'll probably mention this in the review just as a random thought to include. But I think that and you might not agree with me as an aluminum customer. But I think that the steel finishes are all nice. Silver, space black, still very nice. Like originally that was only with a link bracelet for a lot of money, and then they brought it down with a sport band. And then the new gold finish, I think those are all really nice. I think that the silver and space gray aluminum, even with the new screen, feel a little bit dated to me. Like it just like original watch, iPhone 6 era. And with the 10R coming in lots of cool colors, like silver is one of them, but they also have black. That's like matte black, not space gray, I think, like the iPhone 7. You know, they've got red, coral, blue, and yellow. I feel like those should be the aluminum colors. And then you reward the aluminum, the cheaper material, for having more color variety. And you know, like maybe they do that in a future year, but I feel like the 10R colors are just like the perfect candidates for new aluminum colors, and leave the steel ones as they are, because like, you know, are you going to have red steel? Like maybe it'd be kind of cool, but probably not, you know, but that'd be neat at the aluminum end of the side.
Yeah. I quite like space gray aluminum. I kind of feel like the difference between, I mean, I'm not going to deny the stainless steel ones are nicer, like full stop. But I'd say it's like in the iPhone 7 generation when you had the normal colors and then you had jet black. But to get jet black, you had to get the higher storage option. So you essentially had to spend $100 more at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't say the normal colors are bad, but I think everyone kind of agreed that jet black was nicer. I think that's a decent parallel between like the aluminium watches and the stainless steel watches.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is nicer, but the normal ones are perfectly fine too to me.
But even like, that year, you had black, not space gray, which was cool. This is matte black.
So, yeah.
You know,
I mean, don't get me wrong. If money was no object and I wasn't worried about like breaking it or scratching it or any of that stuff, like I'd probably get space black every single time.
But what if matte black aluminum was an option or space gray for some reason?
Yeah, I'd probably pick matte black, yeah.
Okay, okay. So we're on board with the tin-R colors for the watch. I'm going to campaign for that this year.
I'd pick matte black for sure. Because I use black band, so I'd want black body as well.
And that's such an easy thing to use. Like for the first watch, they used it in the fall. Like they added the gold and rose gold as aluminum options. You know, or was it the spring? Anyway, it was like mid-cycle. I think now you won't need to do that mid-cycle, but for the next watch, Series 5, that looks the same, you know, but has some new features about it. Like, that's a fun way to play with the color options, like, you know, throw in color on the aluminum sides. And you've already got the 10R aluminum that you've been building, you know, and you can, you know how to work with those colors. You can just match them to the watch. I think people would buy a black or red or blue or yellow watch or coral, which is like, you know, the orange, pink kind of color, so... I think it's not out of the question, so I'm campaigning for that this year. I think we'll talk a lot more about the watch in the future. I mean, we always do anyway. I love the watch. So
we talk about it a little bit, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Every now and again.
9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Zendura, makers of the X6 power bank and USB hub, an A8PD portable charger. 9 to 5 Mac and Zendura have teamed up to give away a brand new iPhone XS Max that retails for $1099 brand new. And Zendura is giving Happy Hour listeners 15% off their portable charger and power bank with our special promo code in the show notes. X6 power bank and USB hub features a 20,000 milliamp battery, one USB-C input and output port, four USB-A output ports, and a built-in USB-A hub feature. X6 power bank even supports up to 45 watt power delivery, so you can charge MacBooks and other devices. Zendura's A8PD portable charger includes an even larger 26,800 milliamp battery, 30 watt power delivery, pass-through charging, a single USB-C port, and four USB-A ports. Sign up for the giveaway for the iPhone XS Max on 9to5mac.com or use the link in the show notes and you could win a brand new iPhone XS Max for free. Entries are open through October 17th, 2018. Let's run through Mojave. Do we ever do like one episode on Mojave or probably the WWDC episode?
Yeah. I mean, let's be realistic. There isn't anything so major in Mojave that we need to do a whole episode on it.
Yeah. You did a fun thing yesterday. You were messaging me the first time you were using Mojave and you're like, are you using, you know, X, Y, and Z? And there were just so many no's in a row that it was like, a lot of what I'm doing on Mojave is the home app and everything else. Like I'm reverting to the way it used to work because I prefer that. That's like what a Mac should work like.
Yeah. Well, I can run that down quickly now and then give my comment and you can say what you want. So obviously I think the flagship feature is dark mode. So dark mode is new to me. You've been settled in with it since June. Do you use it?
I can't work with it on for longer than a few minutes. There is an app that's been getting coverage. I'm not sure that we've written about it yet, but I think it's called Night Owl.
Yeah.
And it does what you would want dark mode to do, the main thing it does is the menu bar out with a lighter dark button. Like you can quickly toggle it. But the other thing is you can do sunset sunrise or you can schedule it to change and that's what you'd expect it to do but it can't. So no, I'm not using dark mode.
Me, I tried. I really tried to leave it on, and I like it. It is hard because like iTunes I think looks really good in dark mode. I think Photos looks really nice in dark mode. Messages looks really nice in dark mode. Mail, no way. No way. Like there's just so much white in actual mail messages. Even if they even have a setting which is like use dark mail messages when possible, I turn that on and most messages are still bright white. You have the same problem with Safari. And then like my third party news app doesn't support dark mode yet. And Twitter, Tweetbot doesn't yet. And like you could turn on a dark theme, but you know, like the actual like system dark mode would still turn it in on the cool stuff, it doesn't. And so I'm on day 3 of Mojave. I'm back on light mode all day long.
Yeah.
If they could let me set it per app, I would do that for like things like Xcode and Photos and then iTunes, and then probably everything else, I'd leave it the same. Because I really like the dark look with the blue highlight colors, really pop, like it's really nice. But when everything's together, not quite doing it for me at the moment.
Hmm.
Now, dynamic desktop wallpaper. What do you think about that? Are you using a dynamic wallpaper?
I'm not. I think they're cool. There aren't enough options. It's just the desert. And then later on they added like a color gradient.
Yeah, an abstract gradient.
Yeah. And it's not that they're not like pretty. I think they're neat. But I use a MacBook and it's often on battery. And to me, it's like, I don't know what the battery hit is, but it's not zero. So I don't use it. I think if I use a desktop computer that was plugged in and they had space ones, I would use them.
Yeah. I mean, where would they get space imagery from? It's not like they have another product, which they have plenty of pictures of space, but for some reason, they can't just quite line those up. I like the dynamic wallpaper, and I've been using the Sand Dune one, but I feel like after a few days, the novelty is going to wear off after I've seen like every one of the 16 different pictures they have, a few times over, and then I'll probably just change it back to a different picture.
Uh-huh.
If they had more dynamic wallpaper options, I'd probably flip between them more, but at the moment there's only two, and I think the gradient one looks stupid. The Sandy one is cool, but like everything, it's probably just going to become a novelty pretty soon. And I do think it's really, really weird that they have this, which is like wallpaper on a schedule, but then the actual dark mode, they don't include an automatic schedule for. I think it's very strange.
And they have TrueTone on a schedule too for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Including Sunset Sunrise.
Desktop stacks, which is like it takes your desktop and then you can change it into this mode where it arranges everything into little groups depending on file type, but it doesn't actually change the folder structure or anything. I actually have quite a messy desktop quite often, just because I just like have loads of screenshots and stuff, and I just kind of put stuff there when I'm not doing anything with it. But I just don't really see how Stacks is going to help me versus opening a Finder window and then like listing by date added or something and scrolling through that way. One nice little thing is that the Stacks do differentiate screenshots from just other images, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because technically they're the same file type, right? Like they're JPEGs or PNGs, but the actual content is, you know, screenshots versus just a different image you download for the web and something. So I did actually use that once, but in general, I don't really see the appeal for Stacks really for me. I don't know about you. Have you used Stacks? Has it become an essential part of your workflow?
No, the thing with Stacks is I keep a really tidy desktop, and I try it during the beta period, like especially when I had a lot going on, and it was like, you know, here's a bunch of screenshots, here's some folders, here's some different files. It's like I couldn't find a way that made sense for me. It just kind of hides my stuff from me. It's like if someone came in my home and like rearranged it and cleaned it up, and like technically it was prettier. I just wouldn't know where stuff was. So no, not on the desktop. But I think you can use it. Can you use it in like the downloads folder or stuff like that? I think
it's desktop only.
Yeah. If you can use it in downloads folder, I think that's a place where, although I manage mine like really, really, really aggressively too. So I see you use groups, but I think that's different though than Stacks. Yeah, so no on Stacks. Nothing yet.
Continuity camera is this weird feature, I think, like where it launches the camera up on your phone and then you take a picture and it just pastes it into the current context.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really surprised they like prioritize adding this feature into the OS at all, because for me, I just take a picture and use like iCloud Photo Library or AirDrop or something, and like, yes, it is technically quicker to do it this way, but it just seems like inverted to how I would think, because I go, oh, I need to take a picture that I want to use my computer, so I pick up my phone and take the picture. I don't go, wait a sec, let me click on a menu item here, then click take iPhone picture, and then pick up my phone and take it. Like, it's just the wrong way around, and there's already solutions, whether it's like AirDrop or even just like emailing it or iCloud Photo Library stuff to actually kind of achieve the same thing. So I don't really see myself using that at all.
The demo of this was with iWork, but it's not just iWork. Like, it's in lots of places, including messages. And the one thing I wish they'd do with messages, and maybe when they get Marzipan, add a photo picker to it. Like, because you can't do that. You got to go to photos and, like, drag it, and it's really buggy right now anyway. But, like, you know, if I were going to continuity camera you a photo and messages, which you can do, I would probably just send you the message from my phone. Like, it's more natural that way, right?
But I do it. Use like, or you take the picture and then you copy it and you paste it, like use universal clipboard stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do the same thing now, but I've not even tried this yet all summer. That's how much I've not needed it.
Yeah, I did it when I got it just to check that it actually worked, and then I was like, okay, I guess there we go.
Yeah.
The screenshot preview thingy, which is like they put a little thumbnail in the corner of your screen, basically mimicking what they did on iOS with iOS 11. I actually quite like that. Now I realize that you can actually drag the thumbnail straight into some apps.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to do it with Slack, like you just drag the corner from the corner straight into Slack, but Slack doesn't support it. That's not really a surprise. Slack isn't a great Mac app. But it works in like Messages or like Safari and some other places. And that's pretty useful to me because a lot of the time I'm just taking a screenshot to share with like you in Messages or something, right? And I don't really care about it going to the desktop. I've just taken a screenshot and I want to quickly just send it to you. And before I would put it on the desktop and then drag from the desktop to the Messages app. So now that kind of cuts out a middle step. The weird thing where you can click on it and then do like mini markup stuff, I'll probably never use that part of it.
So the thing with this is like it's really nice on iOS, like that's where it started. So it's like designed for that, optimized for that. On the Mac, it's kind of shoehorned in there, I think. And the old screenshot stuff, like there was a Grab app that I never used, but like some people used it. I wouldn't use the default keyboard shortcuts because to screenshot part of the screen or a whole window. Or part of a screen, space bar, just one window, not the whole screen. It went to the desktop by default. Or you could do like a fourth key. I forget which one it is, but it's a lot. It's like 5 keys total, I think, or 4 keys total to do to your clipboard. And to me, the clipboard's usually what I want. And if it's not, then I'm going to open it in preview anyway. So I can just like do preview command and new from clipboard. And like I'm in the same boat anyway without having the file to worry about. And so I've always remapped my shift command, like what happens to 1, 2, 3, and 4 versus having like, you know, having to do the option or control key 2. So I think the default was bad before too, but I would always remap it and then it's better for me. It's like I've got muscle memory of what I have it as, and it's not, and I think it should be like the default was what I think. The new stuff, I think it'd be kind of cool, like if you did screenshot to clipboard, you got the little preview thingy, and then you could like drag it if you wanted to, maybe. But to me, it just always slows me down because if I screenshot to desktop and I want to put it somewhere, then I'm waiting for it to go there. You can drag an image from your desktop to Slack and send it, like it does upload dialogue, but you can't with this new thing. Like you can do it in Messages, you can do it in different places, but not with Slack, like you mentioned. And so in that way, I'm screenshot, and I usually swipe it out of the way to like kind of speed it up, maybe. I don't know if it's just in my head, but then put it on desktop and then do something with it. So I don't love this change, and I wish I could disable it. This may be like
I kind of think what they should do is if you're doing the shortcut that saves to file, is that it should make the file immediately and give you the little thumbnail.
I'd be okay with that.
And
it's not in the way.
And basically, it'd just be like an independent copy, right? So if you ignored the thumbnail, then nothing would happen, right? It's because you've already got it on your desktop and it's fine. And then if you edit the thumbnail, it would then save that copy out separately, right? So if you actually interacted with the thumbnail, you'd end up with like 2 files, realistically. But most of the time, you're going to open the thumbnail, share it, or just ignore it and just use the file that's already on your desktop. So in 99% of cases, you're just still end up with 1 file. It would just benefit both cases without, you know, slowing you down.
Yeah, yeah. So this most of everything is a yes or no. Are we using it? This, we have no choice. It's just do you like it? And I'm a no for that.
Yeah. I mean, the Mac App Store is another thing where, like, you don't have a choice. Like, if you're using the Mac App Store, you've got the new one. I think the new Mac App Store is an improvement over what was there before, which is not saying much. There is some weirdness to it in places where it kind of feels too much like an iOS app, but it's not terrible. It's fine. I think some areas are quite nice. You get the nice little editorial stories where they talk about stuff, and the update screen is a lot prettier now and better laid out, and you can definitely tell it's not all just a big web view. Like, there is definitely more use of native layout and stuff there because it's just more responsive. I don't think it's a groundbreaking change to the Mac platform. The main problems in the Mac App Store continue to be like the sandboxing issues and that, you know, that class of problems not the front end interface to it.
It's hard to use on a small screen unless it's full screen. I'll say that.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. But I appreciate that they did a design that isn't just a copy of the iPad App Store design. That's like true. And there is some nice innovation there, and like when you view a story, it goes like a full screen panel with like a big picture on the left and thing on the sidebar. And there are some quirks and things I could criticize, but on the whole, I'm like happy with it, and it's definitely better with what they had before there. I do think it's funny that there is now no touch bar support on it whatsoever. On the old one, you'd get touch bar controls to switch between the tabs, like just purchased, updates, you know, top charts. And even though this new design has clear tabs, like they have tabs running down the left side of the screen, none of those are exposed on the touch bar at all, which is kind of amusing.
You need a vertical touch bar to match it.
And then my most painful proclamation.
It's going to be a tease for next week.
Yeah. The Marzipan apps, news, stocks, voice memos, and home. They're pretty bad.
Yeah, you've got a lot of opinions here, and so I don't want to corner you into like the last 5 minutes of this episode.
Yeah.
What I will say is that voice memos I don't use on my phone, really, and I don't use on the Mac, but for the same reason. Stocks, same thing. Apple News, great service. I know a lot of readers love it, but my job is reading the news, and like before it, you know, like it, aggressively reading the news and like, you know, as it breaks. And so Apple News is a little bit slow for me and like less control than I want.
Yeah, Apple News is like closer to like a newspaper experience where it's like published every few hours.
I wouldn't recommend RSS to anyone, or like sign up for Twitter, as bad as it is, and like build your follower list. Like that's hard, but like I for my profession, I've done that. But Apple News is like too slow and redundant for me. But I get why people like it, and so it's cool. It's on the Mac. The quality of it we'll discuss next week. And then the Home app I use every day. Like I used it on the iPhone and on the iPad. I use Siri, you know, on the HomePod. I use Siri on the watch for home. But I often find that it's very convenient to access the utility of controlling HomeKit on the Home app. It's in my dock full time.
Yep. And I will say one line just to kind of curb some expectation. I have no problem with the direction that I believe this is going in. I just think the four apps that they shipped today were really, really bad. And whatever tech stack they use underneath does not excuse them. These four apps are pretty mediocre, borderline bad. And they don't label them with a beta. They don't make them optional downloads from the App Store. The news app even gets inserted into your dock by default on an upgrade. And they're just not very good Mac apps today. Yeah, simple as that. We can talk about it more in the future.
Yeah, last thing I'll say on that, and that we'll discuss a lot more next week too, is that they got a lot of leeway here. And this is a point that you've mentioned to me a lot before too, is that by having apps that weren't on the Mac before, except as maybe like dashboard widgets, they didn't replace a Mac app with a Marzipan app and an inferior version. So they get a lot less slack than they would have, because it's nothing versus what we have, utility, and not like – I mean, people were mad about iPhoto being – iPhoto was bad and like needed work, but like people hated Photos even so. And that was a closer thing of like replacing a Mac app with another app. I mean, Photos is a Mac app, but they used another approach to – you know, scaling the iOS app on the Mac, you know. And if they like replaced, you know, desktop Safari with mobile Safari without any changes, people would go crazy.
Or like Mail. Mail would be a great example. Like, imagine if this version of Mail and Mojave was suddenly the iPad version of Mail.
That might actually be better. Mail on the iOS has a lot more.
Well, you know what? Like, there's so many features on like Mac Mail that aren't on iPad Mail still and stuff. And toolbar layouts and all of that stuff. Like, that's how they dodged a bullet so far. And how relatively few people are complaining. Just the four apps never existed before. So you can always just say, oh, well, there's new features now that you didn't have before. So whatever. Like, yes, that's true. But at the same time, you know, there's a level of quality that you come to expect from Apple Incorporated. And here they clearly missed the mark. I don't think that's really debatable.
All right. we'll pick up there next week. In the meantime, if you're new to Happy Hour or you've been listening for a while but you've never had the opportunity to rate us, feel free to rate us in the Apple Podcast app or in iTunes. It helps people discover this show like you may have done. And also, if you use an app like Overcast, you can recommend us. There's usually a star on the Now Playing screen or somewhere in the UI that you can tap. And all that does is says, I like this podcast, and your friends that use Overcast can see it too, and makes it easier to discover. In the meantime, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac with any feedback. You can also follow us. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZach. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And also follow 9to5mac. Stay tuned for my Apple Watch review. It's either published now or will be coming by the end of the week if I have my ducks in a row. And we'll pick up with the marzipan talk next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.